Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
It was a stunning result after 14 days of testimony total, stretching over 5 weeks, several weeks really of deliberations, even though they only got to deliberate for 3 full days. To come to that conclusion after all of that was certainly stunning, and now we have to wait and see yet again to see if this is going to go back to court.
I'm not able to discuss campaign strategy, but what I can tell you is that every dime we've spent over the last 6 months is aimed at defeating this ballot measure before it increases electricity rates for Arizona families.
My expectations weren't that high. I worried about what President Mike promised during the private meeting. But I certainly didn't expect to hear what we all heard during the press conference.
And with us to talk about the end, at least for now, of the Arizona Corporation Commission-related trial, as well as President Trump's meeting with Russian President Putin and how it was received, are Barrett Marson of Marson Media and Democratic consultant DJ Quinlan, who's also communications director for the Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona campaign. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
So, Barrett, let's start off with the outcome of this Corporation Commission trial, George Johnson, corruption, alleged bribery. While we were playing the clips there, You kind of shook your head thinking that the outcome was a surprise. You weren't surprised?
I don't believe I was surprised at all. I don't know that if you watched the trial a little bit that you should be surprised. It wasn't the strongest government case. And in fact, it was 7-5 breakdown for acquittal. I think if it were a 10-2, 11-1, even 9-3 for guilty, that it would be an easy case to make to go on. But 7-5 for acquittal, what is the government going to do now to convince a majority of jurors, to change their minds? I mean, it's a different jury pool, of course. But I don't know that they can change that much. They can do something different to change the minds.
DJ, in the big picture, does it concern you at all? Because it even based on what Barrett's saying, obviously, jurors have certain things they have to go through. There's certain rules they have to follow, we know. But this is one that I think a lot of people were banking on potentially leading to a bigger fish.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's still a giant cloud that hangs over the Corporation Commission. We saw just, last week the executive director resign from an undisclosed conflict of interest. I think there's a lack of trust from the voters. And look, when you get into these juries, there are specific jury instructions and specific things they're looking at. And, whether payments to the wife of the head of a utility constitute a bribe or whether they're some sort of making air quotes on radio, consulting contract. Average Mary and Joe beer can look at this and they see this something's not right. Something doesn't smell right.
One of the things that came out in the trial that really hadn't been discussed before is that Sherry Pierce, the wife of the Corporation Commissioner, former Corporation Commissioner Gary Pierce, did a substantial amount of work for George Johnson, through Kelly Norton, ex-husband was one of the co-defendants. She did a substantial amount of work. Now, I think she could do a substantial amount of work and there was still a payment to Gary Pierce. I think that both can be true. But the government had said this was a no-work contract. And it is clear Sherry Pierce did a lot of work. And the government couldn't prove that, well, even though she did all this work, it was still a bribe. I was of those people who were like, boy, just the payment could look really bad. And, Sherry Pierce and Gary Pierce share a, bank account. So it is going into his bank account from a regulated entity. So I was concerned about that would be a problem. But the jury, for some reason, did not feel that way. It didn't feel that the government really proved that element.
Well, Barrett, you raised the question. So let's get into this. What does the government do next? I mean, do you think that they will maybe take some lessons from this and retry the case?
Well, part of the problem is Kelly Norton, the star witness, an unindicted co-conspirator and the ex-wife of one of the defendants, she was inconsistent on the stand. She wasn't a great witness. Also, there's a lot of talk that she has a, gripe against her ex-husband, clearly. So that is going to be a problem, and you cannot rehabilitate that in a second trial. She's still going to have that gripe. She didn't make a great witness. I don't know that she'll ever make a great witness. And when your star witness has that sort of problems, it's going to be a problem for any jury.
DJ, what do you think?
Well, I think we should just again, take a broader look at this. I don't think in Arizona we have strong enough conflict of interest laws. I think that's what led to the resignation yesterday, and that's probably why the government couldn't, you know, completely make its case. I served in the Air Force, and I know that when we received conflict of interest training, it wasn't just if there was an actual conflict, which I think surely there was here. It was, what is the appearance of it? Mm-hmm. And I think this is where there's a lack of trust with the voters for the Corporation Commission. There's a big cloud hanging over it.
But, DJ, you're conflating state laws. This is a federal case. They made a federal case on it. There are federal laws that were alleged to have been broken, not state laws. So it doesn't matter whether we have great state laws or not. This is a federal case, and they still couldn't prove. And again, I think that Sherry Pierce, you know, could have done some work and still have taken money from a regulated entity against the law. But the government did not prove that. And so, you know, yes, the Corporation Commission has had some issues, no doubt. But to say that this is shows a fact pattern when actually the government didn't prove its case, didn't prove that it was against the law.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I would also say that, you know, it's really on to the states to have stronger conflict of interest laws where it's more pertinent and more relevant to the specific laws of the state. The reason it had to go to federal trial is because Arizona doesn't have strong conflict of interest laws. And the Arizona Corporation Commission is rife with conflicts of interest. We just saw it last week with the resignation of the executive director.
Before the trial started, there was a lot of anticipation of what might come out during this trial that I think the phrase was a lot of the commission's dirty laundry might be aired. Do either of you think that actually came to pass? I mean, did we learn a lot of what happens there that we didn't already know?
I sat in on a couple of days of the trial, and I got to say, I didn't learn anything new. Granted, I know the Corporation Commission well, but I didn't learn anything salacious or new. You know, the indictment showed me something new that, you know, I didn't know that George Johnson was paying Sherry Pierce. But we didn't learn, I don't believe, anything out of the ordinary. In fact, a lot of the trial was mundane stuff about how the Corporation Commission goes about making some of the rules for utilities that nobody cares about.
Well, I hate to agree with Barrett too much, but I don't think we really did learn anything new, because I think we already knew that APS has a super cozy relationship with the Corporation Commission, very inappropriate. Other utilities do as well. And that there are, you know, the Corporation Commission is rife with conflicts of interest. And I think we just got more confirmation of that.
It'll be interesting. They have a couple weeks to decide whether to retry, but there is a wider investigation allegedly going on. I think it's dubbed High Grid. What does it mean for that? You know, I'm sure the government wanted to use any guilty verdicts to then, you know, go up the chain. But now that there are no guilty verdicts, it's hard to go up that chain. And is there even a chain to go up? I mean, it's been 2 years, I think, since the government went and got records from APS. I think it's been 2 years. Where's that case?
DJ, let's move on to a sitting congressman in Arizona who has generated a lot of controversy lately. Not that he hadn't done that a little bit before. It's Representative Paul Gosar, who has come out and endorsed State Senator Kelly Ward, former State Senator Kelly Ward, in the race with Martha McSally and Joe Arpaio for the U.S. Senate. And then also, Gosar attended an event that people were a little bit concerned about, an alt-right event. What, obviously, you're speaking from a Democratic point of view, but what is up with Paul Gosar, to coin a phrase there?
Yeah, I mean, look, Paul is on the extreme far right end of the spectrum. He has consistently demonstrated that he has a disdain for the establishment wing of the Republican Party. That sentiment carries a lot of weight in Republican primaries these days. I think that you've seen a lot of mainstream Republicans kind of opt out of the primaries and maybe even re-register as Republicans. I think, you know, you see a lot of that even, you know, with what's happening on the presidential level and other places. And people like Paul Gosar have taken advantage of that and kind of solidified their power base in the Republican Party.
Now, Barrett has one
well,
thing.
Well, let me just say, yes. I am an expert in body language, just like my good friend Representative Gosar. I can tell from DJ's body language, he does not like Representative Gosar. I just want to get that on the record.
But now, Barrett, has Gosar changed from the public point of view? I know that you've known him from past years, but it seems to many people that maybe he was not a conventional conservative, but an understandable conservative. Mm. And for a few folks in the last few years, maybe a little bit more to the right wing.
Well, you know, it shows sort of districts, if you will. When Paul Gosar first won his race, he was in a very competitive district. Now he's in a super right district. He could walk down probably Gurley Street in Prescott and shoot someone and still get elected.
So
he lives in a district where he doesn't have to be cautious, where he can say what's on his mind. And so long as it's kind of right wing, it's all good.
DJ, do you think that his support for Kelly Ward matters at all in that primary?
I do. I think that Paul Gosar does speak for a wing of the Republican Party. And I think right now when you look at this primary, I think Martha McSally has the full backing of kind of the establishment wing of the Republican Party, which I always say this even as a Democrat, unfortunately right now as a minority in the party, at least in the primary electorate. I think Gosar will help to solidify some of that conservative base for Kelly. Whether it's enough to overcome the split that is happening with Arpaio also on the ticket remains to be seen. That certainly is to the benefit of Martha McSally. But look, no one's going to win with 50% of the vote in that primary. And I think that Kelly Ward is still in the game.
Kelly Ward is in the game, but Joe Arpaio has his game pieces and is playing that pretty hard. So, it is likely to complicate any path forward for Kelly Ward. And Martha McSally has too much money.
And Barrett, very briefly, we've heard that billionaire Robert Mercer, a big fan of President Trump, has come up with about $500,000 for Kelly Ward. Is this in time if she wants to use this for ads or whatever maybe?
Well, absolutely. I mean, $500,000 is great, except for there are other PACs out there with, mid-seven figures that are coming in for Martha McSally. So again, that will dampen. And Kelly Ward herself isn't raising that much money.
I think it's not just about money, though. I think there's an extreme distrust amongst the conservative base towards Martha McSally. She ran previously as a moderate, and I think now she's trying to kind of rebrand herself.
That's DJ Quillen. Also here is Barrett Marson with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. It's the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. Thanks for listening to the show here on 91.5. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests this week, Barrett Marson of Marson Media, and Democratic consultant DJ Quinlan, who's also communications director for the Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona campaign. So, DJ, let's do a little bit of chatter about what happened in Helsinki between President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. A lot of people, even a number of Republicans, disappointed by the president's performance publicly. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of stunning to see a president of our country, regardless of what party, kind of so clearly not acting in the foreign policy interests of our country. And really, I think pretty unprecedented. I'm a student of history, and I can't recall another incident so clear. I think what possibly is more troubling is the private conversation that occurred, where Vladimir Putin has come out and said that, there were some promises that were made, and we don't know what those are. But if you look at what's happening in Ukraine over the last few years, what's happening in Crimea, and Putin asserting that potentially Trump is open to a vote for a kind of Russia proxy in eastern Ukraine, basically we've kind of kicked NATO in the shins and kicked our allies in the shins. And, turned our back on the U.S. intelligence community and even, the administration's own State Department.
Yeah, but the worst thing about that vote, from what I understand, is they want to put Secretary of State Michelle Reagan in charge of the vote. So God knows what will happen there.
Yeah, Barrett, when we talk about what President Trump did, though, how strange a performance was that?
One thing that we know about President Trump is he cannot, he refuses, he will not separate the idea that Russia meddled in the election and that his campaign colluded. One can be true without the other. And, we haven't seen, he can yell all he wants, no collusion. We haven't seen it. We haven't seen necessarily examples, but the Mueller investigation is still going and they surprise us all the time. But even if there is no collusion between the Trump camp, it still can be that Russia meddled. But he refuses to separate those two issues. And that's sort of – that leads to the problems that he just will not challenge Putin. He will not – he will not accept the fact that Putin is an enemy. He's a competitor only. And, Germany is a more of an enemy, it seems, than Russia, according, Trump's worldview. And, that's a problem. And he, just refuses to, he can't get his mind around they can be two separate things.
Do you think there's also an element to the idea in the president, and this has been written a little bit, that in the president's mind anyway, and that's certainly not a place any of us are, but in his mind, if it's true that Russia meddled, that somehow delegitimizes the fact that he won the election.
You know, remember, I mean, we can talk a lot about, 70 or 80,000 votes between Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And so, you know, he had a big electoral victory of 306 or whatever. He'll tell us all the stats. But that was the close margins in individual states. So if he acknowledges, in his mind, I'm guessing, if he acknowledges that Putin tipped the scales, then it wasn't his great wisdom, his great people, his, you know, skills that got him over the finish line. It was the Nudnik from Russia.
There's also the issue now of the president apparently inviting Putin to come to Washington, D.C. for another summit. And, you know, we heard some sound yesterday of Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, who appeared surprised when he heard that, when Andrea Mitchell at a security forum mentioned that to him. And I think the line was, well, that'll be special. It's tough to keep up with everything that's happening. How does that sort of fit? How does him coming here, Putin coming here, potentially fit in with some of the stuff we've been talking about from their summit in Finland?
I mean, it was only a week ago that Brett Kavanaugh was selected.
Who's that again?
Yeah. I mean, every day. I mean, I'm a news junkie. I love the news. I'm a former reporter, and I dig the news. And even I get tired of it. I got to turn off, you know, the television. I got to stop looking at Twitter for an hour just because there are so many things going on. You cannot get comprehend what is going on because the next thing is going to happen in any minute now.
And DJ, final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I just think this is just like the ultimate demonstration of what's wrong with this administration. And I am a little heartened to see people like Senator John McCain come out and speak very forcefully against it. I think I would welcome more Republicans speaking out against it because this isn't really a partisan issue at this point. You know, look, the election's over. Hillary Clinton got 3.5 million more votes than Donald Trump did, but Donald Trump won. And the fact is, at some point, he needs to realize that he's the president of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. He is not the spokesperson for Russia.
So one other topic we want to get to, guys, for sure, is lawsuit filed against signatures collected for the Clean Energy for Healthy Arizona ballot measure. DJ, of course, your communications director. I want to make sure that that is said again. I want to ask you, though, generally, as many signatures as were turned in, there's clearly is not a surprise. There's a legal challenge for that and some other things. We expected that. These are potentially controversial measures. But what do you make of it? Do you think it's legit?
The lawsuit, no. The lawsuit's really rather delusional, I think is the word we've been using. We expected a lawsuit from the beginning. APS, who is funding the lawsuit, has funded the opposition, has already moved $11 million of customer money over to influence elections. The majority of it has been spent against us, against the Clean Energy Initiative. It's really clear they'll do and say anything to stop voters from even having a choice. The same ratepayers that they're taking money out of their pockets to pay for it, they will do and say anything to stop them from having a choice. Look, there's a reason we got 480,000 signatures. The process of this is such that you're going to have some that are bad. But it certainly is not what they are alleging, and we're very confident that in November voters will have a choice.
Okay. You know, one thing to say to DJ is, you're right, voters should talk about this, but they collected signatures from 195,000 non-voters, and so these aren't voters. There isn't an overwhelming desire for this from voters. There might have been an overwhelming desire from people who aren't registered voters, but we can only talk in the realm of voters. But mark it, 10:26 a.m. on Friday, the 19th, whatever, the 20th, that, you know, they call it delusional, but this is going to be a serious challenge. Just looking at some of the petition sheets that have been, you know, put online and with no notarization on the back, which is a must. I mean, those signatures are gone. It's a steep hill to climb. There is no doubt. 480,000 signatures. It has to have about a 45% validity rate, give or take. That is going to be that most, you know, efforts like this get a 60, 70, maybe 80% if they're lucky. So it's a big hill to climb. But it is, you have people who are dedicated to climbing.
I'll get Barrett, but very briefly, though, if it makes the ballot, do Arizona voters, when they get the chance, Do they go in favor of it or not?
Oh, I think there will be a very robust campaign, both from the Tom Steyer people and, you know, from the APS people. It will be, I mean, you think you get inundated with presidential ads and, you know, seeing Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, you're going to see, you know, smokestacks and nuclear, power plants, you know, in the backgrounds. I mean, it's going to be something very, very robust, no doubt.
We also want to ask about a lawsuit filed late yesterday to the what's being called the Stop Dirty Money campaign. Mm-hmm. Again, not a surprise. I mean, a lot of these initiatives have challenges. The margin, though, of signatures submitted to signatures needed is much smaller than that. Do you think that one ultimately makes the ballot?
Well, and that when I just talked about, you know, 60-70% usually for a initiative, you know, they will, you know, this group will face some serious problems. It didn't get the all the attention as DJ's camp got, but there are going to be some serious problems in with those signatures. Are there 60,000, give or take? Obviously, we're, you know, the recorders. And, you know, we've sort of overlooked the recorders really are from all 15 counties are going to play a big part of this process. They're going to start looking at these signatures very soon to determine whether it's actually they're actually valid.
Yeah, I mean, Barrett mentioned that they are alleging that 195,000 of the clean energy signatures are non-registered. I'm willing to bet my lunch that when the county recorders look at it, they're going to find that's not even close to true. These folks don't have any
interest. Can we bet a lunch at, like, City Hall?
I'll bet you any lunch you want,
maybe Steak 44 or something like that. Let's go.
Any lunch you want.
All right.
We can have
that.
We're
on.
But, yeah, I do think that the other ballot measure could have some substantial problems because they did not turn in nearly the cushion that the Clean Energy campaign did.
That's Democratic consultant DJ Quinlan, who is also communications director for the Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona campaign. Bert Marson of Marson Media playing at some comedy club tonight somewhere around town. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.